Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sarah Briner, who is the Research Director at the Center for Responsive Politics, who just released the report Millionaires Club. For the first time, most lawmakers are worth $1 million plus. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Briner.
Happy to be here.
And as I mentioned and mentioned in the opening, it does seem that the given now that as of May 2013, the median net worth of our current 350 lawmakers is $1,008,767, which to my interpretation means that the first time in our history, half of our representatives in Congress not only represent the 1%, they are the 1%. So is that the byline? Is that the takeaway here?
I think it's probably been the case that members of Congress have been members of the top 1% for a bit longer than that, because we have to remember their incomes put them in a higher income bracket anyway, and that money isn't even included in the net worth statistics that we released yesterday or last week. So I don't think it's necessarily the case that this is brand new. For the first time, we have really wealthy people serving in Congress, but I think that the sort of nugget here really encapsulates the type of people that we have serving in Congress right now. They are not your average American citizen.
So here in California, of course, we have the dubious distinction of having both the wealthiest member of Congress on that list, Representative Daryl Issa, whose net worth is between $330 million and $598 million. He, of course, was arrested as a car thief and then turned his talents into creating a company called the Viper Car Anti-Theft System that he's marketed. And then the poorest is Representative David Valadejo, another California Republican. His debts are $12.1 million, mostly apparently loans on his family's dairy farm. So if he's the poorest, you've got to be a millionaire to be in debt, don't you? At least to the tune of $12.1 million. I mean, presumably he hasn't declared bankruptcy, so he must have at least $12 million worth of assets.
Yeah, I can look at that, but I believe that most of his debt actually comes from investments in a dairy farm. Mm-hmm. Yes, he does have more than zero. His range is from negative $24 million to $164,000. So that's quite a range. It's really hard to pinpoint a member-specific net worth because of the way this information is disclosed, but it could be the case that he's worth positive amounts of money. We just don't have a good sense of that right now.
Well, of course, the other fellow with the top of the list, Daryl Issa, he's quite prominent because he's a grandstander who has a committee that goes on these wild goose chases, like looking into the some bogus arms sales in to Mexican cartels that was ginned up into the Fast and Furious scandal, the Benghazi thing. They've been beating a dead horse on that one for some time. So he's quite high profile. What's the is there any connection between having a lot of money in Congress and ending up with an important committee chairmanship?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think that it's common for the poorest members to be in high-profile leadership positions, but oftentimes leadership positions go to career politicians, people who have been in office for a long time. And the wealthiest members tend to be those who made their wealth prior to entering politics. You know, John Kerry may be a bit of an exception there. He actually married into wealth, but I don't think that the top of the list is not Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, Nancy Pelosi, although she actually is quite wealthy. So it seems to me to be a bit across the board. I think that having a lot of money does help you when you are fundraising. You know these people because you interact with them in your day-to-day life, and so you know the deep-pocketed donors who can help fund your campaign, and if you're in a safe district, your friends' campaigns as well.
Well, of course, we also have Senator Feinstein here in California, whose husband is extremely wealthy and has been given an exclusive contract to dispose of the valuable properties of the United States Postal Service. And under California law, of course, she owns what he owns, at least half of what he owns. So one of the things I find extraordinary, though, is that aren't there more Democratic millionaires than Republican millionaires, or is it pretty even, Stephen?
It's fairly even at this point. The Republican senator tends to be worth more, slightly more than the Democratic senator. That's a change. We lost at least two very prominent, very wealthy Democratic senators. We lost them for the pool, Frank Lautenberg and Herb Kohl. And John Kerry tended to bring that value up a lot for Democrats in the past, and they're no longer serving in the Senate. So right now there's slightly an edge to the Republicans in the Senate, but only just barely.
And the first one you mentioned, of course, Lautenberg, his fortune came out of pharmaceuticals. Kohl is the big department store, right? Kohl's.
Right, although his wealth was almost entirely held in the Milwaukee Bucks basketball team recently.
I see. And then Kerry's wealth actually comes from his wife, who was married to a Republican senator, the heir to the Heinz 57 ketchup fortune, right?
Right.
So, and then Sensenbrenner, the congressman, the Republican congressman, I think isn't his family own aren't they the manufacturers of the tampon?
I'm not sure about that. A lot of these companies have very boring sounding names, so
right.
Until you poke around in them, you don't quite know exactly what they are, but that could be.
Right. Well, I'd say that would be a business that stays in business. So give me a sense then, if you don't mind, Sarah, of how this wealth is broken down in the Millionaires Club, which is for the first time, most of our lawmakers are worth more than $1 million. What do they put their money in, or what's their wealth largely? What comes up first as a flag in their wealth?
Sure. The most popular investment, I suppose you could call it, is actually real estate. And I think that surprises a lot of people. Most members hold most of their money in real estate. The very wealthiest, sort of the top of the top of the top, tend to hold their money in trusts. And most members, as far as investments on the stock market are concerned, tend to invest in very conservative, very, historically strong stocks. Or they hold their money in mutual funds, which some say is a way to prevent there appearing to be conflict of interest concerns, because they don't have to disclose the content of the mutual fund. They just disclose the fact that they have it. So generally, we don't have a lot of hedge fund investors in the Millionaires Club. It tends to be more conservative investments and, wealth vehicles.
It seems, though, that the most popular investment of the Congress, both senators and Democrats, is General Electric.
Right. That's the most popular stock.
And what are the other ones that they like?
There's Procter & Gamble is up there, again, a not particularly elastic or not particularly variable stock. I think some of the others are things like AT&T. I can go down the list. Microsoft, Wells Fargo, and that would be investing in the bank itself, not having an account there. Apple, Bank of America. So these are Fortune 500 companies, very large, very staid investments. Members of Congress, by and large, don't tend to take a great deal of risk where their investments are concerned.
But they're not required to put it into a blind trust, are they? Like, I think, heads of cabinet positions, the head of the CIA, for example, is required to do that.
No, they're not required to do so.
So where do we stand with the Stock Act? You recall that it was discovered that after 9/11, a prominent congressman from Alabama, who got all of the – no, sorry, it wasn't 9/11. It was the 2008 crash. when they were in desperate shape and the Secretary of Treasury was on his knees begging Nancy Pelosi to help him out, and George W. Bush was absent without, you know, AWOL because he was in a state of shock, and the economy was just in free fall, apparently this congressman was making trades on inside information he was being given about the TARP program. So that led to, I believe, a 60 Minutes investigation that then led to some congressional action to put a wall between inside information that Congress people have and their ability to buy stocks that would benefit from this inside information. Where does that stand now? Because I understand it was watered down.
Right. The insider trading component stands as written, and so it is illegal for members of Congress to profit on their insider knowledge. The part of this that was watered down is really the part that makes it so that citizens can be aware of what their members of Congress are doing. It may surprise most people that members of Congress oftentimes hand write these disclosure forms. So that's their own personal handwriting, writing pages and pages of investment names, of amounts, and that information is filed on paper and released in PDF form, which we then have to hand enter into databases. And in my opinion, it's, you know, the 21st century. People could be filling these out electronically, and then individuals would have much easier access to become aware of what their members are invested in and where they get their wealth from, and not have to wait for a year and a half after the member may or may have bought stock or sold their house before they're aware of that transaction. So that component was removed quietly. A component that would have made those forms needed to be filed electronically was removed quietly last April to little fanfare, and that's unfortunate because it just really guts the ability for the act to allow citizens to learn about these disclosure forms. So we thought that was unfortunate. We wish that they would put it back in, but there doesn't tend to be a lot of energy to, these sort of legalistic, these very technical legal changes that would make it just a lot easier for people to learn about this.
Well, it hardly sounds like an accident. I mean, if you're one of the few watchdogs on Capitol Hill, the Center for Responsive Politics, that do this grunt work, you know, you're the ones that go through all these filings to let us know, the public and journalists know what's going on here. And it sounds like since you have discovered firsthand how difficult and how long it takes to get this information out from these handwritten documents, it would seem to me that that might have been the purpose of that change in the law.
Right. It was folded into a requirement that was designed to protect foreign diplomats who, through some component of the law, what may have been required to disclose their addresses when they were living in foreign countries, which was a safety risk. But they didn't need to take out the entire electronic filing and electronic database component of that to protect the identities and safety of foreign diplomats, in our opinion. So we wish that that would go back into the back into the law. And it's just very difficult to – these forms are very technical, very complicated. Many members attach hundreds of pages of brokerage statements that we have to both hand enter and interpret. So this isn't the way it needs to be. It could be done more simply in a way that gave normal Americans the ability to learn about their abnormally wealthy members of Congress, and hopefully that will happen someday in the future. But until then, we will continue to hand enter pages and pages of technical data. So,
well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sarah Briner.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Sarah Briner, who's a research director at the Center for Responsive Politics, who just released the report, Millionaires Club, for the first time most lawmakers are worth $1 million plus. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer David Rochert. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.